This interview is sponsored by LinkedIn. Do business where business gets done. Get a $100 advertising credit towards your first LinkedIn campaign. All you have to do is visit linkedin.com/Mixergy. That's linkedin.com/Mixergy. Terms and conditions apply. I'll tell you more about it within this interview. Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses for an audience of entrepreneurs. About 10 years ago, I interviewed today's guest in, I think, the only debate-style podcast episode I've ever done. Chris Pearson created this WordPress. Is it called a theme or a framework?
It's a theme. Framework was sort of a marketing term.
And you know what? And here's the thing about your stuff. So freaking beautiful. Down to the freaking pixel. Every theme that you created for WordPress, every design that I've seen you put up online just looks really beautiful. He is the maker of Thesis. It's a modular template and design system for WordPress. I interviewed him about how he built up his company, and then he got into an argument with basically the father of WordPress, right? Matt Mullenweg. And I had Matt Mullenweg on my Skype friends list. So I said, Matt, do you want to come on and just do a debate, have a conversation about it? I don't even think I called it a debate. It became this big thing that blew up. And I assumed, and we'll talk about what happened. I assumed, Chris, that you did great afterwards, that it wasn't a big deal for you. I didn't realize until today that your business suffered a lot because of this argument with both Matt and with his company, Automatic, makers of WordPress.com. So I wanted to find out what happened there. You say this is the result of cancel culture. You were essentially canceled. And I want to find out about that. I also want to find out about Focus, your WordPress theme. You call it the world's fastest WordPress theme. It's got gorgeous content presentation styles, golden ratio typography. It's just gorgeous. Anyone can see it on DIYthemes.com. Chris, good to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Good to be back after 10 years. Can't believe that's when that was a big moment sort of in my life, sort of one of those milestone markers where you realize one era is over and another one has begun. You were a part of that.
Before, at the height of the previous era, how connected were you to WordPress? How big was your business?
Well, my business went through just an insane period of growth. I basically kicked off the premium theme market with Thesis. I was the first premium theme to really get like significant traction. And that was middle summer 2008. I was the first big affiliate program in the WordPress product space, which also launched a little bit later, about a month after I really got a lot of popularity. And that kickstarted just this incredible run-up. And it was so potent that it skewed my sense of how much business one could do online and how much business one should do online. I was getting so many free sales. It was so easy, so effortless. Like everyone was saying, this is what you need to use. Life is so good when word of mouth only recommends one thing and nobody asks any questions. Phenomenal stuff back in the day.
And top bloggers were using you. Of course, most people know WordPress as the software that a third of the internet is built on, right? A third of websites are built using WordPress. And your theme was incredibly popular. What year was this?
That would have been 2008.
2008.
And continued, like the ramp up continued unabated through the summer of 2010. Actually, I was on with you. And then like the next week, I was on again with you and Matt. It was an interesting moment because it was really just a big misunderstanding. And it was sort of caught out of context and out of time because I didn't really understand even what I was defending the way I mean. Other people can go watch this.
How would you explain what the disagreement was between the two of you?
The disagreement was very simple. My software had never been sold with any licensing whatsoever. I had never even thought about software licensing. This is not something that mattered. It didn't have anything to do with the way the code worked, whether it worked for users, whether it delighted people, just no relationship at all. So my head was never in that space. But Matt Mullenweg, for whatever reason, went on a sort of a crusade, I guess, through 2010. It may have started earlier than that. I honestly don't recall. But he wanted everyone who sold premium products in the WordPress space to also have a specific type of licensing, GPL version 2.0 licensing, along with those products. And I had spoken with some IP attorneys who advised against this. I had spoken with a couple people who had built and sold software companies who advised me against this. I really didn't know what to feel one way or the other, but I felt like I was being coerced to do something told to behave in a certain way. And despite all the advice I received from others or experts or whatever, at the end of the day, all I cared about was that I was told to do this thing. And I do not react well when I am told to do a thing.
I get that about you. And what was it that you didn't like about that? What did that license mean for your product, and what didn't you like about it?
Well, you know, everything's sort of perception and ego at the end of the day. I was the top dog in the space. I had tons of people attempting to rip me off. There was sites called Free Thesis and other stuff like that that felt like, because of what Matt had said, that my software should be free and shouldn't be paid. This was still at a time I was trying to prove that the premium market was viable. Now, at this, by 2010, it was clearly viable. We had sold a few million dollars worth of software at that point. But, you know, I was the target. If you were going to go big game hunting, I was the big game you wanted to get. So I felt defensive about that. You know, I want to protect what I've just built. I barely had a chance to look around and survey the room and say, oh, this looks pretty nice.
And they were saying, have this license that says that people could copy your theme, right? You're nodding yes. And the reason that they wanted it was they said, look, if WordPress can be copied by anyone, anything that's built on top of it should have the same freedom built into it, right? And you said, no, I can own this. And that was the argument? I know I'm simplifying it, but that was it.
It was unsubstantiated and unsupported by any legal precedent. There was no reason. We want you to do this because this is what we want. It wasn't good enough for me.
Okay. And you also felt from a personal freedom point of view, they couldn't tell you what to do. You were just going to go ahead and just do it and charge for your theme. Right.
They weren't saying I couldn't charge, just to clarify. They weren't saying I couldn't charge for it. They were saying you need to charge for, you change your licensing, you charge for it however you want. But this introduces a certain amount of volatility and vulnerability that I would then have to address if this type of thing flared up in the future. And I knew I had enough people out there who already despised me for my success, my outspokenness, and for the fact that I dared to not kiss the ring publicly, who would ready and waiting. And I had people threatening me this all the time, which is this behind the scenes stuff nobody ever got to see. People threatening, Chris, I'm going to rip yourself off. I'm going to start selling it for half price. We're going to do all this, add on this, all this other stuff and get people away from you and into our camp.
And that would have been possible, right? If I, Andrew, would have bought Thesis theme, I could have created the Mixergy Thesis theme, just a few tweaks to it and sold it on my site, right? With access to a group or some kind of online forum where they could talk to me about how to implement it.
That's right.
And that's what you wanted to avoid.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And so you went and said, I'm not going to do this. And before I find out how they retaliated, give me a sense of where the revenue was at that height.
Let's see. I think about $2.5 million worth of software sales per year. And that was with a single product at one measly price point.
Profitable at over $2 million, I imagine. It was just you, right?
I had a business partner up until the Mixergy interview.
Yes, this was Brian Clark of Copy Blogger, right?
I wasn't going to mention names, but okay.
I think he said that he had to, and it was clearly he went with someone else who I had interviewed and just partnered up with them instead of you.
Okay. Yeah, I think in business terms, your audience will love this because this is not normal. This is not normal.
Okay.
After that interview, he wanted out because the press was getting hot and heavy. It was negative, negative, negative.
Okay.
So, you know, if many business people who are much wiser than me know that this type of thing is not worth dealing with. They don't want friction. I get it. I'm not a businessman. I'm an innovator. I'm a creator. I want my space to do that. I want everyone to leave me alone. I don't care about protecting revenues and stuff like that. This was too much for Brian. He's like, you are already tough to deal with. You're going to add on all this negative energy coming our direction. It's not worth me fighting these battles. I don't blame him. However, what he did in the wake of that, there was no easy way for him to exit and get everything he wanted and to do it in the time frame he wanted. So he made up a fake interview that never happened, planted it with somebody who hates me because he was going to publish it, a guy named Aaron Brazell. Aaron hated me because I used to dunk on him. It's fair is fair. And, so Brian planted this interview with questions and he made up the questions. He made up the answers. They suited his purpose, conformed his little narrative. That served his purpose to get out, to distance himself from me and to make it look like he was a good guy escaping this evil demon who is unhinged.
Okay.
And then he turned around to Brian Gardner, who had a profitable theme business with Genesis, which was based on the Thesis model, the way their code worked. was based on the way Thesis worked. Thesis was the most unique one at the time. It was the only one that ever departed from the WordPress structure in this way, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. Genesis was a cheap copy of Thesis. Brian Clark went over to him. He already had established revenue. Brian Gardner gives him 51% of the business for free to say, hey, come in and run this. That is not a normal transaction. Usually there'd be some monetary basis, some something. No, Brian Gardner just supinated and said, come shower me with dollars, Brian Why? Clark. Come save my business.
Well, but the business didn't need to be saved. But Brian did help grow it.
Well, save in terms of growth.
Got it.
To the next level.
And Brian was good.
He's the Hollywood producer who gives you a promotion.
He's really good at that, right?
Yes.
They took it to an insane level. And you got to keep 100% of the business, and then all the customers that came through Brian.
I had to pay him out.
You did?
Something like that.
Okay. All right. And then the business suffered because you didn't get his traffic, his credibility, in addition to other things?
I did a pretty good job of keeping the wheels on for the next 2.5 years. So this was July of 2010.
Okay.
I immediately acquired the services of Derek Halpern.
Okay.
Of Social Triggers fame, and he's now running a direct-to-consumer supplement business called Truvani. Derek's a hell of a businessman. Started off in like copywriting, psychology, persuasion. He ran my content strategy for a couple of years in the wake of all this. Did a fantastic job. Brought in tons of new eyeballs. He was able to sort of flatline revenues in a period where they were dropping like a rock.
Wow.
So he deserved absolute ton of credit. And I deserve credit for hiring him during the wake of this, because this was an unbelievably tenuous, tumultuous, awful time. The fact that he really did such great work stabilizing it and stabilizing my audience to keep people around, people were scared. People were like, oh, the founder of WordPress says, you know, puts a scarlet letter on this guy. You know, people had irrational fears such as, is my thesis going to stop working? Is the next WordPress update going to say no thesis? People were leaving for all sorts of reasons, some rational, some not. And I was labeled the villain in all this, and sort of was fortunate to weather that storm with good soldiers like Derek, who kept me afloat.
You said that Brian thought you're already too much trouble to begin with, so you might as well be done. What type of pain in the ass were you?
Let's do this, you know, let's do X. X being some idea for low hanging fruit revenue generation that also creates unending legacy workload type stuff for me. Stuff I'm never going to be able to let go. Trash thing, cheap deal, acquire money now, but you have to support this garbage thing that's going to be annoying for the next 8 years. It's like signing me up for this low vibe software production model, and that was never my thing.
Like what?
I'm an innovator. I don't do cheap stuff to keep it
like
moving.
Like what? What's a cheap thing that might have been thrown at you?
In theming, a cheap thing might be to tweak your theme a little bit and give it just a little bit of a different look. Okay. And so you'd have your base loadout, and then you have this loadout that has a different look. Well, you have to maintain both. You have to answer idiosyncratic support requests around each one. And depending on the way your software is built, if your software is built like a basic WordPress theme, these two entities are almost completely different, completely separate, meaning very high management workload for maintenance and support in the future. And my whole direction at the time, and still is to actually go the other way, to make all the different permutations of this thing use the same basic atomic components. And that creates a much more manageable workload. Like I've made incredible strides since then. This is obviously 10 years later. I've almost eliminated support for my business. There's almost no such thing as support anymore because I've nailed down all the basic patterns of software. Everything is patternized. Everything gets a very quick, canned response. I have quick, concise, and accurate answers for damn near everything that comes up. It's a miracle compared to what other companies deal with. Backlogs of support queues, 10 miles long, hiring new support people, trying to integrate them. Like, what a mess. I've transcended all that garbage.
You seem like a very organized person that way. All right. And I get then why you wouldn't want to do the things that Brian or another business owner would have wanted.
Unsavory stuff just for revenue. I don't like that.
Got it. Because you want the order, the structure, all that.
Higher level achievement.
All right. And then Matt Mullenweg comes after you. And the reason I asked you to do that conversation with Matt was he was, I think, coming at you on Twitter. I think a lot of people came in response to the interview done with me a week before saying this big issue that Chris is going through, he's being unreasonable. And it became this heated thing.
It
ended with you saying, I'm going to go in my own little world, and WordPress saying, we're going to ignore him. He had a theme on WordPress.com. It's not going to be part of WordPress.com. We're going to create our own world, our own reality, and pretend that he doesn't exist in the world, right? But not crush you.
What you described is not how I would describe
how that. Would, yeah, you tell me. What happened?
There was all sorts of back channel work after that. Matt Mullenweg offered publicly to personally pay for any premium theme that anyone who was using Thesis wanted to switch to.
People away from that. My audience. Right.
He had back channel work going on, trying to get me to agree to certain terms. I Skyped with various people, the WordPress community, people who were trying to coerce me to do X, Y, Z. Otherwise, you see that this is probably going to happen, this kind of thing. There was a lot of people clamoring for me to bend the knee, which is just an odd thing. Like, if you're a third party, why would you care? Seems odd. If your biggest competitor, the top of the market, says he's going to bow out gracefully, I'm saying, great. Throw me that revenue. I'm not going to like try and get him to bend the knee too. That doesn't make sense. They were being coerced by men.
Why didn't you? I mean, we're talking about basic Sun Tzu. If your enemy is bigger than you, don't fight them. I wonder why you didn't just say, all right, let's just go.
Well, I didn't see them as an enemy until I got off that interview call.
Oh, they were attacking.
That's when I knew the shit had hit the fan.
Okay. And then even if at that point, after the interview, couldn't you have said, you know what? I got it all out of my system. I think I'm right, but I'm open to the reality that says maybe I'm wrong and the reality that says I got to play with these people. Fine, I'll adjust.
That's what actually happened in the wake of that. Two weeks after that, I changed my licensing to match Headway, which didn't have a fully compliant GPL license, but was compliant enough, according to Matt, to be left alone.
And?
No effect.
Why not? They just needed to make a example of you, you think?
So I'm not trying to politicize this at all, but I have seen an analogous situation many times since, usually in the veil of politics. But apologies, when you want a scalp, and I was the scalp that was desired by WordPress at the time, an apology doesn't matter. You just want to get the scalp and show it off. Doesn't matter what type of capitulation I did after that. It was about the scalp.
Got it.
Subsequent actions made that very clear.
And then it scared everybody else.
Yes, that's right. It literally scared everyone else into compliance. Some people, I had lots of people, sympathetic voices, contact me on back channel saying, man, I hate to see what is going on with you. They're like, but please do not ever ask me to comment on this type of thing. I'm not touching this stuff publicly. You know, basically I was the only person who was willing to touch the flames and say, nah. But, you know, you can't expect other people to jump in the fire with you. And I certainly never did. But I'm telling you, the amount of people I had sympathetic well-wishers on back channels would surprise a lot of people. It scared the hell out of other distributors, other theme makers, other plugin makers. And let me just say I've received a lot of, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, emails through the years. I didn't understand. I didn't get it. I'm sorry.
Because what? What did they suddenly understand?
That this was about power and coercion and not about the good of the community or any of that. These are all political buzzwords designed to serve as substitutes for rational thought. And it's not, you know, I have a very like childlike view of this whole thing. Like, let's celebrate innovation. Let's make new things. Let's be excited. And that's not what the community is. The community is like, do it our way. Look this way. Have this diversity. Be inclusive in this way. Use these types of terms. Speak in this manner. It's all coercion. It's all sameness. And that's what we see now. The sameness of output in WordPress. It all sucks.
So after that, your business suffered. How bad did it get for you personally, financially, before we get into then the speech that
I mean, to be quite honest, I think I'm suffering from the worst of that right now.
Now, why?
It's been a long, slow, painful death, but the bottom hits. You see the bottom coming, and the bottom comes up much faster than you expect. It's like jumping out of a plane without a parachute. By the time you realize it's too late to pull the cord, you're probably splatting.
Where's revenue now?
Oh, it's just, I mean, not enough to live in San Francisco.
Really? We're talking about what, under 200,000?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
And you're still... Oh, yeah. And you're still fully invested in DIY.
I have branched out in terms of opportunities. Basically, what I've tried to do in the last, since October of 2018, I have redeployed some of the assets that I built. I've got a ton of leverage. I'm sitting on a mountain of awesome code that can be redeployed, reused in various ways within WordPress and also without WordPress. And I have attempted to redo all that stuff. But what I found is that the audience, acquiring audience, connecting with the audience, who the audience is, what people are paying attention to, all that stuff's, it's totally not the same. WordPress doesn't matter anymore. Nobody's talking about WordPress. It used to be that there was sort of like this thread through the universe that was WordPress that defined it. And everyone knew like what the conversations were coming off of this thread for a while. There's like a cohesive community view. That is completely fractured now. That does not exist anymore. All these websites that used to talk about WordPress, they've all lost their audiences. It's all fizzled. Nobody cares anymore. Everyone's settled into this like droll, tiresome routine of website complexity and of dealing with it. And, oh yeah, WordPress, we've got to deal with it, you know, like a special kid. That's sort of the viewpoint now. It's not exciting. And the only thing that's really working is the snowball momentum of popularity. So the Kingmaker thing that WordPress engaged in, the Kingmaking has been done. You've got your most popular plugins. You've got your most popular themes. You don't have a lot of new players emerging in these markets anymore. We've seen the growth of agencies who have thrived around the complexity of WordPress and who have six-figure contracts with large companies that need websites because it's cheaper than having people in-house. You know, two engineers is more expensive than having a $100,000 a year contract with an agency like 10Up, which, you know, I'm very familiar with the inner workings of some of these agencies. They deal with crap. All they deal with is inefficiency and grossness all day. I can't believe they can even tolerate it, to be honest.
You were telling me before we got started that a little bit after the incident, Matt Mullenweg gave a talk somewhere and he said, "You won't believe what we did," essentially. Or what did he say?
This was 2014. So the original thing was in 2010.
10, yep.
I reorganized my business. I spent 2 years, all of 2011, all of 2012, developing a brand new thesis platform to work the way I thought websites should work. Quick caveat, during this process, when I first got into it, I spent 3 months developing a solution that looks very much like the Divi theme now, Elementor, page builders such as Beaver Builder, this kind of thing. These dominate the WordPress, the premium WordPress theme and plugin market now. Make millions and millions of dollars. I built something like this. I realized that the output from it was grossly inefficient. Like, this is just not, I want the best thing. It, you know, HTML is finite. CSS, the language of styling on the internet, is finite. The amount of scripts that run on a site to do things should be finite. All these things are finite processes. And if that's true, if something is finite, it can be perfect.
Okay.
So therefore, I'm only accepting it if it's absolutely perfect. I can get any outcome I want exactly how I want it. That's the machine I wanted to build. The thing I built, I realized I could never get there with that, so I abandoned it. It's funny that this many years down the road, this really started in 2016, that what I had built became what the vision was because it was the obvious one, but it's a piece of crap.
but people anyway. Still buy it.
Oh, people are buying it because it looks like what they expect it to look like. It's this idea of like your intuition tells you, oh, this is what the solution to my problem is going to be, but you don't realize that in using this tool, all you're doing is creating idiosyncratic waste. Just this mountain of snowflake stuff, snowflake
that
input.
Slows
no
down
patterns.
The website that does what?
It slows down websites, makes them harder to manage, and increases the cost of anyone going in and working with anything. But when I say increases the cost, I mean literally increases the amount of time one has to engage. But it also increases the amount of errors and unintended consequences that happen when somebody tinkers with the system.
Let's take a moment for my interview and talk about my sponsor, LinkedIn. Let's pretend for a moment you're about to launch a campaign. It tested well. Your entire team is happy. Everything is going according to plan. Except for that one thought in the back of your head. How do I ensure the people I want to target will be in the mindset to actually receive my message? Your answer? LinkedIn. Because when you market on LinkedIn, your message reaches people who are ready to do business. That means your advertising campaign will work as hard as it can as soon as you launch it. Do you know that over 62 million decision makers are on LinkedIn and they're thinking about business? It's one of the many reasons more than 78% of B2B marketers rate LinkedIn as the most effective social media platform at helping their organizations reach specific objectives. I use LinkedIn to find guests for Mixergy to know exactly who's got the right company in the right sector with the right business size to ask to do an interview here. LinkedIn can help you reach your short-term goals, your long-term business goals. They offer tools for brand building and lead generation. Not only can you target and reach a professional audience right down to their job title, company name, and even location, but you can engage people that you already know based on who's visited your site or who you contacted in the past. You can even customize your campaign based on action you want your customers to take and objectives you want to achieve. Doing business on LinkedIn, the world's largest professional network, can help you reach your marketing goals. So here's your call to action from Andrew. Do business where business gets done. Get $100 advertising credit towards your first LinkedIn campaign. $100 advertising credit. Just visit linkedin.com/Mixergy. That's linkedin.com/Mixergy. Terms and conditions apply. Let's jump into the interview.
Chris, is this still you being the same you were 10 years ago where the world is going one way, but you know that it's wrong and you refuse to go in that way because it's wrong? Instead of saying, all right, I get it. You people want this. You're willing to deal with some errors. You're willing to pay people to do this. I'll give you the thing that you want instead of telling you why you're wrong.
It's exactly the same mentality.
And you're willing to go down with that ship.
Absolutely. This is the only ship that's exciting mentally. It's not exciting just to do something for money. It's so lame. I wish I was motivated in that way. It would solve so many of the BS I deal with.
What's the BS that you deal with? What do you put up right with here, because of this?
Swim upstream all the time. Who wants to do that? Who wants to do that? Why would anyone willingly choose to do this unless they just completely believed in the vision that they want to bring forth? Because they know this is a better place to operate. There's some euphoria here. I get to experience that on my own. I would love for others to feel and to see what I see and to feel what I feel, to feel that power, that leverage, that cleanliness, knowing that you are doing things the right way.
I don't see the power. I don't see leverage, but I do sense the cleanliness and the beauty of the thing the way you want it to be. You know what? In preparation for my interview with Jason Fried of Basecamp, I went back and I read my transcripts of my conversations with him over 10 years. We're talking about 6-7 times he's been on. It feels like every time it's almost the same thing. Me going, but who did you ask to make sure this made sense? Who did you check with to make sure that this made sense? And him, in every different way, sometimes taking a sigh before answering, but in every different way you could imagine, saying, I don't need to ask anyone. I know how I want it to be. Version one is me. The beauty of it and the functionality needs to be what I want. If I ask other people, it ruins it. I feel like that's what you're getting in your creation. You don't need to check the market to tell you that it makes more sense to do what Divi does than what you do. You don't need to check in with anyone else. You just need to know, I know this is beautiful. I know this makes sense. If you could see it from my eyes, you would get it. And that makes you happy.
Yep. Yeah. It's that simple and it's that complicated.
And do you never get a jealousy that other people have done better? You never get any sense of like, why is Brian Gardner doing better where I should have done it?
Oh, not at all. Not even a little bit. First of all, I had the initial ramp up and got to experience that basic sort of success. So I've gotten to experience that. It's not like I've been left out of that party.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, the rewards that I have gotten from chasing after what I know is better and right and deeper and more thoughtful, those are infinite rewards. I mean, I tried to describe this. I look like a crazy person when I do so, but I mean, this is the best. You know, when I was developing, this is the best I could do to sort of try and illuminate it for everybody. But when I was developing Thesis 2 in 2011, 2012, I distinctly remember for months at a time, my head was so wrapped up in what I was building and the leverage of these components and how beautifully they all work together, this stuff. I had this like daydream hallucination of me like traveling through space way out in the galaxy, getting to go places that nobody else gets to go because I built up this large framework in my mind and was able to see it and utilize it and leverage it and stand on it, work off of it, get that perspective. And so I've reaped infinite rewards by being obstinate. I would have denied myself those if I'd chased money or if I'd been jealous or tried to emulate what I saw other people doing, I wouldn't have had those. Those things.
Money problems because your revenue went down?
Do what?
Do you have any money problems? Any problems like not being able to pay for your home or not?
Kind of yes, kind of no. Kind of yes, kind of no.
Let's not create this fairy land where everything's perfect. Like what?
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it, sort of. But I mean, how bad is it for a guy that owns $1 million house? How bad is it for me?
You know, own it outright?
Do what?
You own it outright?
Damn near. I own like $163,000 on this house or something.
Got it. Okay, so you don't have any of the financial worries. It's not like you're sitting down going, if we don't sell anything, if we keep at this level, we're going to not be able to feed. I'm not going to be able to feed my daughter. It's not that.
Yeah, it's not quite that bad. You know, I've got options. I still have options. You know, you always have options, generally speaking.
All right. You know what? I was going to get into the thesis.com issue, but this kind of makes me want to bring up your politics. I followed you on Twitter for a long time. You have these conservative points of view that you tweet out. And every time I see you tweet it out, I think the same thing that I sent you in a direct message yesterday, which is, don't you worry about losing business because you're putting these tweets out there? And do you remember what you responded with?
I do. So hold on. Let me just say, I don't really consider myself that political. I am engaged with what I consider to be the culture war that is going on. And I do have some takes that are often considered to be right, or in the way I describe it to people is I'm anti-left. I am not right. I'm socially super liberal. Like, I do not care what people do. I think intrusions in personal lives are disgusting, this kind of thing. I'm very much freedom-minded, leave everybody alone, let's all have a good day sort of thing. But many of the viewpoints that I, you know, espouse publicly typically get lumped in with right-sided views, stuff like that. I disavow all labeling, though. I am not a conservative. I am not right-leaning or, you know, alt-right or any of these things. I think that's lunacy. However, I do remember what I said to you, and that is that, no, I don't worry about getting, you know, canceled or losing business or any of those things. And in fact, I think it's awfully telling, revealing, that we ask this when somebody behaves like me, but we don't sit here and ask the question when you know, cars are moving the other direction on the same street, and that is, what happens if all you do is woke post and, you know, DIE, diversity, inclusion, you know, whatever, equality, whatever these you know, buzzwords are? Why doesn't anyone ever ask that question when companies are engaging in blackout BLM posting and all this stuff? There is a saying, get woke, go broke. That exists because there is a negative business impact from a lot of these things.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
I never heard that saying before.
Okay.
I'm kind of with you that I do feel like if you take the more left point of view, I've never seen someone take a more left point of view and wanted to say to them, aren't you worried you're going to lose your customers?
Right, because nobody sees it that way.
Yeah, until your message to me yesterday, I never thought of it that way. And that's the way you think. But truthfully, though, you are potentially losing customers, and maybe they are too, by taking a political point of view that's counter to a large number of people in the U.S.
I think this is a super salient point right now. I think you can't be an authentic figure without ostracizing yourself from somebody at this point, because we have become such a binary, like, oh, if this, then this sort of thing. It can't just be like, okay, this guy feels this way, but I don't care. I love his products. It doesn't make any difference. We used to not care because
we could shut up about it. You could just say, you know what? I'll say it to my girlfriend. I got buddies that we talk online. I'll tell them. I don't need to go on Twitter and associate it with the personified Twitter account that's the same as my business website. You could do that.
That's a calculation that many people make. And it might be the smartest, best calculation for all I know. But I do know this. So it's fashionable on Twitter to delete everything you posted like that's more than 7 days old. A lot of people do this. Reputation management. It's smart. I'm not smart. I look at Twitter like I would feel very hurt if my history was scrubbed tomorrow. This is like a log of my life. I can go back and look at a tweet from 2011 and I'm immediately taken back to that mental state. I can almost get some of those feels. I can like not relive, but I can revisit. I can examine the growth that's occurred since then. I can examine my mindset. Like, this is a gift that I have built by being authentic. Like, this is me. There's nothing in the way.
Like, so this keeps coming back.
Desire to be authentic.
The lesson that comes back to me from you is,
It's not about money. It's not about market appreciation. It's about getting to your authentic self. And if it means losing Twitter followers, losing customers, losing business partners, you're willing to do it to just make sure that every pixel is the way that you want it. Every line of code is as simple and as right as you see it.
That's right. That's right. That's fair.
I have to say that coming from New York, that just, it's a shocking way to live. And I'm open to it. I mean, I want to be open to it. I just never seen someone who felt this way, especially having suffered so badly for standing up for what you believe and seeing that so many people were willing to distance themselves from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you fly a little too close to the sun, your wings get burned and people don't feel too bad for you. And that's okay. You got to decide what's most important to you. For me, you said, you know, having every detail and all that stuff exactly as you want it. There's a purity and a clarity and a depth of understanding, all these gifts that come out of that process, this iterative thing. We live in a society that trains us from the very beginning to say that, well, you just do enough to get the good result, to be perceived well by others, and that's good enough. And I have lived a life of extreme achievement and success and all this stuff, and I sit there and say, I don't care that I got a 98 on this paper. It doesn't mean a damn thing. The only thing that matters, if I look at this and say, I see holes here, I see holes here, I see how this could be tightened, I am the judge now. I have transcended society judging me. I am the judge. And if I'm not happy, I'm going to keep going.
I thought that the whole benefit of capitalism was that it was supposed to incentivize people to care about the market and other people. People like you who are talented, who have an eye, who have something to contribute, to be forced to listen to what people like me who aren't talented, who don't have an eye, who still want something. And because you want our money, you have to conform to my and the thousands, if not millions of other people out there who you want to sell to. You don't see that as the greater good.
Not if it means compiling a bunch of technical debt. Not if it means making a bunch of mistakes that you will address later. Not if it means delaying pain. And if I'm not aware that I am delaying pain that you will be facing and be responsible for, if I'm not aware of it, then it's okay. Unfortunately, I have incredible vision. Incredible vision. I can see way down the road now. I've done this. I've already done these cycles myself, the ones I know other people are going to be getting into. I've already paid all these costs. I know what the future is. I cannot sit here and be an honest man and sell you something that I know is going to create problems now that I have this vision. I would be, so I use this, I try to explain sort of my outlook to others. The concept I keep coming back to is alignment and congruency. They both kind of work together, but like all the stuff that I do, all of my actions, everything I put out there, it all has to be congruent with my philosophy. If there's something that's out of alignment there, it's going to come back to bite me in the ass. It's going to be a psychological thorn in my side. It's going to be something that's going to have to be addressed. And the longer you let it go, I've learned this firsthand too, the worse it gets, the greater the cost of fixing the problem. So now, having paid these stupid costs that annoy me and to eat my time, eat up my ability to innovate and create, I just have a zero tolerance policy. If I can see down that road and understand that this is where I'll be, nope.
Nope. But if you're looking down the road and seeing that revenue is going to keep on going down because of this,
then maybe I should pivot to something where I can operate in a congruent fashion and still achieve what I want.
Got it. Maybe it still has to be a reflection of you and your worldview. And that's number one. It's very much like the beauty of Ayn Rand that I discovered in college is in the philosophy that you're expressing right here.
Okay.
I'm looking at you and I'm getting a sense that you don't want to comment on it because you don't want to be associated with or against Ayn Rand.
Well, I really don't know that much. I haven't read any Ayn Rand. I'm familiar with it.
I feel like you'd love it. All right. You said that you've got some vision for what's next for you. What's the future? What's the next thing?
Well, I mean, it kind of caught me off guard there, but I mean, I do have ideas about what might be next.
Okay.
So I have a daughter, soon to have a stepson, and I'm going to have a son born right around Christmas this year. So I'm going from one kiddo to basically three kiddos leveling up by the end of this year. And almost all of the delightful inspiration I get in my life now is channeled through kids. It really is. And I find kids keep their focus on infinity. They keep their focus on fun, what's next. They don't worry about stuff that sucks. They worry about delight and about, especially like my daughter, she is such, she's so, such like an attraction point for, you know, just receiving the gifts of the universe, living in delight, living in this sense of wonder and possibility, all these good, just good vibe things that suggest something new is around the next corner, living in a space of novelty and delight. And this is one of the things that sort of defined my adult life, is looking around and seeing how many people lose a sense of both, a sense of novelty and a sense of delight, or how many people become numb to their senses in general and just start living out the same pattern. It doesn't matter if you're a billionaire. If you live the same tired pattern every day, you're poor. You're spiritually poor. And I'm sure you've seen this because, interviewing the scads of people you have over the years. One of the most telling things for me has been how many rich people I've met who are just miserable. Nothing that I thought when I was like 10 years old that was going to solve all these problems or put me in a better place. None of these things were true. And what I've come to find out as an adult is that really these children are the ones who are hanging on to what's true and good in this world. And all you do is, you're growing up, we just get numb to it. I want to be a live receptor in the same way that my kid and other kids I'm around are. And so I'm thinking about this in terms of like what I'm going to do next for business. I want to create delight. I want to create imagination. I want to try to solve some existing problems because that's a big component of what I do, solving problems, introducing efficiencies, introducing like some sort of exponential factor to make things better, something like this. I have quite a few thoughts for what that might look like, retrofitting shopping malls, for example, who need some help, creating games, creating a merger between video games on a screen and stuff you do in real life. What if Ninja Warrior were a video game, for example, with a live component and a video game component? Think about some sort of fusion like that. So I'm thinking about lots of stuff like that. And I, might be playing around with some prototypes.
That's totally different. I thought you were going to say, Webflow is the future. I'm going to switch everything to Webflow. No,
Webflow is not the future. So, I mean, quick comment on all this. Anyone who's doing hiring right now for engineers who's watching this, probably hiring Node, React, Angular developers, all this crap, missing the point. The whole engineering team is fired because they don't understand what the hell is really going on here. These are simply frameworks, fads. They are not fundamentals of computer science. There is a famine, an absolute famine. This is so shocking to me. It really is. There is a famine of people out there operating in engineering and computer science disciplines who really do not understand the most basic tenets of computer science. Not only do they not understand them, they don't work with software that is evocative of these basic principles. WordPress, for example, is a complete violation of basic computer science. It's a mess. Anyone who knows and actually knows would tell you candidly, it's a joke. It's not an object-oriented system. If you went through two classes, CS 101 and 102, at any decent college, you would see by the end of CS 102, you'd be like, oh shit, nobody's doing this. It's the most basic thing in the world for leverage. It's the whole idea of mechanical leverage within a computer system, and it simply doesn't exist. All these JavaScript technologies and all this stuff do. We are leveling up according to what Moore's Law or whatever it is with computer power 2Xing. We are trying, the bet is like sort of like the Fed with money and inflation. We're betting that speeds and our ability to produce things, render output proceeds faster than the growth of our inefficiencies that are baked into our systems. And right now, it's so interesting. This gamble has most websites loading in about 6 seconds. Most web pages loading in about 6 seconds.
Is that
apparently
true?
This is deemed good enough because you get content showing before 2 seconds. Pardon me. And so this is deemed good enough because, it has all the features people want. Without these features, no one would buy this stuff or do this stuff or whatever. That's false too. These are all canards. But the bottom line is, we could strip away all of this stuff. We could do freaking, hammering code into stone, for Christ's sake, and deliver a system that works based on computer science fundamentals And the downstream efficiencies we would achieve just from doing it right, from stripping away all the crap, doing the basic stuff right, it would change the world. This is exactly the process I've already undertaken with my software. And it's something that very few people understand. And it's been frustrating for me because I'm like, who can I even talk to? Nobody gets it. Everybody gets misdirected. They get, you know, they learn the stuff in school, but there's really no connection between school and real work. There really isn't. And so you get out there and you're like, oh, well, these engineers want me to do Node and all that. This is the real stuff I should have been learning. And it's like, no, dude, you missed it. You missed the whole boat. Just went by. You missed the whole freaking thing. But enjoy your salary.
How do you express this in your personal life? This belief in, well, yeah, how do you express it? I saw you're about to answer something on video.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm going for days. So,
you know, and how about in your personal life, this philosophy, how does it come through in your relationship with your fiance, in your relationship with others, in the way that you just carry yourself through your day, the sense of rightness, efficiency? What
I'm demanding.
On what? What's an example of how you do that?
I'm very ritualized in routine and my day-to-day stuff. So I'm easy to deal with in that sense. Like anyone who knows me well can predict where I am at any minute of the day.
Same breakfast, same lunch, different dinner, that type of thing.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, yeah, I fast in the morning. So I just have a couple cups of coffee, but neither here nor there. But bottom line, I'm super predictable in that sense. But in terms of what I will accept, like if my daughter's working on something, she knows that I'm super demand. Like I don't want her cutting corners. I want her doing deep work.
How old is your daughter? She understands that. Hmm? How old's your daughter?
She's five.
Five. Okay. Mine is six. So you you expect deep work from your daughter?
Well, I give you an example in a five-year-old context. So we build Legos.
Okay.
I'm a freak about the inventory of the Legos. I don't want pieces being missing. Then thing is incomplete. I hate incompleteness. I have a meme in my life called the completion bonus. I want the completion bonus. I eat all my food. I clean my plate. I completion bonus everything. To a crazy extent. Now, I don't expect everyone else to operate on that level. But at the same time, everyone around me knows that that's where I'm at. Absolutely. And so my daughter knows that, like, if we play with the Lego stuff, she keeps track of everything. She's like an accountant there now. Knows that the daddy wants her to keep track of the inventory. And she does that. But that's a demanding sort of thing. And a lot of parents are like, oh, no, it's too much. You know what I mean? But if you're around me, you will be picking up on this.
And she'll do that. She'll finish. Oh, yeah. If she's got a Lego project, she'll finish it until whatever she's trying to create is done. And you'll work with
it. It doesn't necessarily work that way. You know, she understands that some projects take a very long time and are not a one session sort of thing. But she also understands that if we're playing with something, we keep everything together. You know, we keep track of stuff. We don't separate stuff. We don't make a mess. We keep things confined. You know, like there's some rules to the transaction here to keep, because they have downstream effects. If we jumble everything up, then we don't know what goes with what. And then we have a problem. So she likes the sanctity of her toys. She has a bunch of Barbies. She keeps their accessories all organized. These ones get these. These ones get these. She loves that order, that separation, that clarity. And if you allow chaos to overtake that, then you lose all of that. And that stuff is hard earned.
All right. I get that point of view. I wonder what it's going to be like in school where they take away that perfection from you, that now you're going to have to battle them in addition to trying to train her and keep yourself
there. I'm not super keen on traditional schooling, shocker.
Not either, but we're actively looking to get away from the traditional schooling, especially COVID. It helped me see what my son was like doing remote schooling and realizing, no, this is what you fought against. Find something else.
Right. Right.
Totally. All right. How do you feel about this? Do you feel like there's something that I didn't give you a chance to talk about?
No. I mean, the most interesting stuff is the personal stuff, the cultural stuff, the battle story stuff. I mean, that's the most interesting stuff, right? I didn't have any misconceptions about coming on here and touting my product. I think that's boring, frankly, that kind of thing. So I feel like I got to talk about stuff that matters to me.
I agree. And then I think that that's the best way to also get people to go and take a look at your product. I had no idea. I've watched you. I've read you over the years. I didn't know that you were going through all this. I just kind of assumed that you had your own island apart from the whole WordPress community and you were happy there and you were building there. And maybe you weren't as big as Theme Forest, but you were still meaningful and still big. I didn't realize you suffered so much from all of that.
I got absolutely hammered.
I had no idea.
I made some missteps as well. Like, so I referenced Thesis 2, which I spent, really all told, it was like 2.5 years of hardcore development. I mean, this was the single biggest undertaking of my entire life still to this point. Doing this was a massive undertaking. It cost about $440,000 to do, which is as cheap as you could do it because I'm paying the best guy in the world to do it. So it was easy to pay myself for that, you know what I mean? But I paid for an office. I had a bunch of employees. I offloaded everything in my life for 2 years so that I didn't have to do anything.
What didn't you do?
Nothing. I'd show up, go sit in front of the computer for 14 hours a day. And I enabled myself to do that because I had people getting my mail. I had people bringing me coffee. I had people bringing me breakfast, lunch, dinner, exactly how I wanted, when I wanted. I had a masseuse come in. I mean, I literally made it so I didn't have to get up out of that office chair for 14 hours a day for 2.5 years. And so I did that, built this great thing. But what I failed to realize is that I had gone so far into outer space, so far ahead of where everyone else was ever going to be, I had no hope of marketing this thing effectively.
Because?
And do what?
Because? Why not?
Because after 2.5 years of exhausting development, I was going to have to spend at least 12 months evangelizing my butt off all day, right, every day, producing videos from 500 different angles. I just didn't have it in me. Dude, I was whooped after that development cycle. It was a huge, like, chakra draining thing, yeah, to go through. It really was. I mean, it was the, it's like me climbing Mount Everest. And then you get to the top only to be told, hey, you got to go climb 3 more. It's just so everybody understands. Like,
right,
shit.
Right. Yeah.
And, I continued actually that cycle through March of 2014. So October of 2010 through March of 2014, I did not stop. And when that was over, I had already been dragged through the coals by my affiliates, people like Chris Lima, who I think you've had on here maybe once. I don't know. He's like a WordPress evangelist guy. People like him who had large audiences of people who were like deciding what to buy in WordPress. They all did not give my product a chance at all. We're just like, this guy's so out there. He already pissed everybody off. He doesn't do the right things. And now he's done this thing that nobody understands. Let's turn our attention away from him. So I received a lot of damaging press. I was already in a vulnerable place and didn't realize how critical my next steps were going to be because I thought I was going to march through the gates with this triumphant thing. You've shown up in ancient Rome and everybody loves you. It was not like that. It was not like that. I really just created a much worse problem for myself. But I wanted to innovate, so I did what I wanted.
And you're still no regrets on that?
No. No.
Well, I wonder, like, what am I missing from behind the scenes? But I have to tell you, when I go to DIYthemes.com, it just is so beautiful. When I see your videos explaining why and what, how things work and why they're fast, it just makes so much sense. I get why you'd be proud.
I think I have a really good, strong offering for people who are willing to listen, but people don't want to listen now. People don't want to look. And what I'm really finding, and this is so fascinating to me, is people have an intuitive idea of what they think solutions are going to look like. If those solutions diverge from this divine sort of intuition, they're not willing to listen. It needs to look a certain way, and it doesn't. It's not the focus doesn't look that way. I'm WordPress. Talking about the input mechanisms.
Yeah, like what, drag and drop?
Yeah, like they feel like they should be able to look at a finished web page, take a border, and drag it out to the right because they want to make this column a little wider.
And why do you think that's not what they should be looking for?
Because that's not how pattern leverage works. You don't drag one line and one template out. That's not how pattern leverage works. That means you've now created, I've got a concept known as idiosyncratic customization touch points. These are singular actions that you have taken that have no pattern leverage at all, cannot be reused, that must be repeated elsewhere for consistent output.
Yeah, that makes sense.
If I tweak one thing, everything else adjusts. I have a very intelligent, adaptive system all based on, so like not even one pixel, not one pixel of space in my layouts is haphazard or arbitrary. So in computer science, there is a concept known as hard coding. Hard coding means you might take something like a value of 10 pixels. You might write literally 10 pixels. Well, that's a specific value. If you change all the other context around it, it might be the case that 10 pixels no longer makes sense in this situation. That is hard-coded. So what you want there is a variable representation, and that variable ideally would adapt However, it needs to adapt when any of the other circumstantial variables change that could affect it. That is an adaptive system. That is something without that idiosyncratic touch, customization touch point. It automatically adjusts for you.
I think I know what you're talking about. So I've said that I have a sponsor, HostGator, and because there was this guy at the San Diego Zoo who did a class for my kids, I went to HostGator and created a website for him to promote the way that he did classes and let other people sign up. And so I said, I'm going to try a more popular theme experience. I've been in WordPress for years. I want to see what people are talking about. And I see what you're talking about, where there's, it's not a single input box. Now I could create any design on any page that I want.
Yes.
And you're right that if I change the one page in a certain way, and then I realize there's a better way and I go and change the next page, and then a better way and I go and change the third page, those first two pages don't get changed. I have to go back and readjust them and then figure out, what did I do here? How did I design this?
That's really the thing. Undoing stuff you've done in those types of systems, that's the worst interaction possible. And that's what, you know, that's so
But
nuanced.
It feels it's great like, in the moment because you say, oh, I just want to be able to put a video here, a buy button here, an explanation for why you should buy there. And then I realize, well, I also need to have this other thing. And yeah, I get what you're talking about.
My favorite aspect of all this too is this, because this really blows apart the whole paradigm. You're saying, I want to do these things with my webpage. I'm saying, what actually works for visitors? You have ideas about what you want to do. That's cute. Uh-huh. If it doesn't work for visitors, it doesn't matter. You achieved what you wanted, but you didn't achieve the sales or the engagement that you had hoped for. And you know, the deal is simplicity wins. Simplicity, clarity, and speed. I use this analogy all the time. I'll use it again here. Your customers are not at their iPad or their iMac with their 1 gigabyte internet connections. They're in line at Chipotle on the run, clicking on a link from a freaking tweet. And if your stuff doesn't come up quickly and clearly, you got to scroll through a mountain of menus, a big image that has nothing to do with the page. You accidentally click on something, the layout shifts, a pop-up happens. Like, give me a break.
Yeah,
they clicked for one thing. If you don't deliver immediately on that promise, you are going to lose. The reality of what I just said is increasing every day. The external pressure to deliver exactly what I just said. You click, instant gratification for why I'm here and a desire to move on. If you can't do that, you failed internet.
All right. It's DIYthemes.com, I think, is the best place for people to go to follow up on this interview. DIYthemes.com. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having me. Love it.